understanding who you are and where you are psychologically in different phases of life, different transitions in life, particularly when you start thinking about retirement, are so important to our outlook and our retirement happiness. Nancy Schlossberg, a professor of psychology for decades, writer, you may even remember her from Retire Smart, Retire Happy on PBS, helps us understand the power of six different psychological archetypes that help us with transition really in anything, as these different paths give us all more hope and promise about the future. I'm Wes Moss. The prevailing thought in America is that you'll never have enough money and it's almost impossible to retire early. Actually, I think the opposite is true. For more than 20 years, I've been researching, studying, and advising American families, including those who started late, on how to retire sooner and happier. So my mission with the Retire Sooner podcast is to help 1 million people retire earlier while enjoying the adventure along the way. I'd love for you to be one of them. Let's get started. Schlossberg, and I think, where are you coming in live from?
I now live in Sarasota, Florida, but my psychological home is Washington, D.C. That's where I had my major career, and that's where I raised my children. And I always thought I'd end up back in Washington, but I got so involved in community things here that I never went back. I mean, for many years, I went back and forth, but so it's Washington.
Washington is your, I love that, your psychological home.
That's where I ask people, it's not where are you from, but psychologically, where are your roots?
And I love that. Yeah. I never heard of it that way, but you're so right. It's like, where am I really from? I mean, I've been in Atlanta for almost 25 years and I still don't say I'm from Atlanta. I still say I'm from kind of the Lancaster, PA, you know, Amish country in southeastern PA. So that's...
I was born in Pittsburgh.
So we're kind of from, we're from the same state on different sides, different bookends.
Yeah. But when people say, where are you from? I don't say Pittsburgh, although I grew up there and have a great deal of affection for Pittsburgh. But I say Sarasota, Washington, or Washington, Sarasota.
Well, you know, I've seen you so many different times on, it's been so many different shows and so many different publications. And I know your PBS special, which the title of that, I think I've even considered that as a title, which is Retire Smart, Retire Happy. I love that. And and you being a psychologist and you're a professor of psychology, did you counsel people for a lot of years and then teach, or what has been the body of your, so you're 92 years old. You are going. You're going strong at 92.
I'm still thinking about it, but I've never had a facelift. So I am what you see.
She looks so amazing. If you're just listening to this, Nancy, you would never think she's 92, but she looks amazing. Yeah, you look amazing.
Well, thank you. But it's all how you feel. Anyhow, you've seen me in a lot of things and titles. Well, titles are interesting because often the publisher controls it to some degree. They don't like your title, but they came up, the American Psychological Association, came up with the title Retire Smart, Retire Happy. And it just works. It's actually a better title than the follow-up book, Revitalizing Retirement. But Revitalizing Retirement is a much fuller book than Retire Smart, Retire Happy. But anyway,
But I go back to your career in different parts of life. And about teaching psychology versus, were you an actual psychologist sitting in a room on a couch?
No, I'm not a couch person. When I was at both Howard University, where I was the assistant director of the counseling service right after I got my degree, I realized something. Somebody would come in with a problem. And I think, you know, I can spend a lot of time with this kid, but there are hundreds of kids out there with the same problem who are never going to come to the counseling center. How can we design programs that reach the masses.
Mm.
So I have always been a program developer. If people would call me when I was, my major career was at the University of Maryland, where I was a professor of counseling psychology. People would call me. They want to see me. I said, I really don't do counseling. I'll refer you to somebody. No, will you see me? And I would say, yes, if I can tape it and use it in my teaching, I will.
Mm.
I was never interested in one-to-one counseling. I mean, I think it's important, but I wanted to reach people that never would walk into a counselor's office. So I'm much more of an educator, program developer, rather than a therapist.
So again, this is your background. You're a professor for 26 years at University of Maryland,
right,
and
yeah,
believe in trying to get this message out to many people. I know that you've written a lot about the transition of going from working to not working or going into retirement. And
right,
that's really what I want to talk about today, because the psychological transition from one phase of life to another,
right,
it's going to have some financial impact. For many of our folks that are listening, it's about either going from full-time work to kind of maybe working less or not working at all. And that is, it really is a hard transition for a lot of people. And that's what I wanted to, talked with you about, is that, first of all, why is it such a difficult transition, first of all?
Well, first, let me back up. Many years ago, I wrote a book called Overwhelmed: Coping with Life's Ups and Downs. And that book was written for, in quote, the ordinary person, not an academic. I have a textbook that's a new edition coming out. But what I care about are the books, the paperback books for $20 that people can buy. So I wrote this book to explain that it doesn't matter whether you're talking about retirement, graduating from college, never getting to college, having a miscarriage, getting married, whatever it is, there are certain factors in any transition. And that's what I try to teach all the time, how to understand your transition, whether it is retirement or whether it is a new venture, whatever it is, how do you understand it and how do you deal with it? And even if it is a transition you really want, you just bought a new house, you're so excited, you're thrilled, but you feel a little let down. Why is it that happy transitions sometimes are complex, are not as happy as they seem? So my goal in the last, I'd say, 30 years has really been to unpack transitions so that you can take hold of it, understand it, and move on. So it's true. I've written two books on retirement, and I've done a PBS Pledge special on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever saw that. That was fun. That was really exciting.
Yeah, you were a home run. You were a star on that, by the way. You're amazing. And that's one of the reasons I was like, get her on the camera. Yeah.
I love that show. That was such fun. But it's not that I'm an expert on retirement. You're more of an expert on retirement than I
am. Thank you.
But I'm an expert on transitions.
Yeah. Okay. So transitions almost sounds like that could be a name of one of your books, but it's not the best title. Back to titles, right?
Right. And
transitions. But okay, so let's go into that then. I'm so excited to hear what you're going to say here, because I want to know. I feel like we could just all be better at it. I mean, and I think about, as soon as you're listening to this, you're thinking, what transitions are you as a listener, as you're listening to, going through right now? And it could be as simple as what Nancy just said. It could be a move, just a move from one house to another, move from one town to another, one job to another, one phase of life to another. Maybe it's a child moving from one big phase to another, a marriage, a divorce, health. Literally, we're going through transitions that are pretty significant all the time. Now I'm typically dealing on the one of the big heavy ones, which is work, no work, or fully employed, maybe partially employed, then fully retired. But let's just go back to the starting block here, which is transitions in general. And before we even get to your different versions or six types of different retirees, adventurer, the continuer, the glider, the spectator, tell me about the transition just in general. Why are they so darn tough?
Well, my definition of transition, it's an event like retirement or a non-event, like not getting what you would plan, not getting the retirement you would plan, not being able to afford the new house, not being able to afford to retire. So it's an event or a non-event that changes your life. And I have four things that it can change. It can change your role, worker to non-worker. It can change your relationships. Clearly, there are many, many changes. With every move, there are changes. Your neighbors change. So it can change your relationships. Biggie, it can change your routines.
Big time.
Your daily routines. And it can change the way you look at life. So
one is role, two is relationship, three is routine, and four is kind of your, what would you call number four, your outlook?
Your outlook, your assumptions about the world, that there'll be loyalty between you and your employer, that your marriage will last, it's your assumptions. And then suddenly things change. Now, even if it's a good transition, when these things change, it can be very disrupting. There was a writer, and her name, I have her name in my book, but I don't remember it, on the Wall Street Journal. And she wrote an article about how they changed her office. It wasn't a bad change, but it so disrupted her routines. She really, it took her a while to get back to feeling okay.
Yeah.
So think of a Geiger counter. So let's say you're going through three or four transitions simultaneously, but some are bigger than others. You're promoted, but the promotion moves you to another city. That's much bigger than just being an acting director. So each change is different. So you can evaluate how much has this transition changed everything. Roles, relationships, routines, assumptions. If it's changed everything, even if it's good, I'm going to have some quaky times. So it's...
You just said quaky times. So just... unsettled, uneasy.
Yeah. I've never said that before. I mean, it just came out.
I like that. Quaky. Yeah. You're just a little, you're not on solid footing. It's interesting you say that. I remember moving into a new house a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. And just remember just being able to get, let's say, normal work done, like sitting down to write. It's like, wait a minute, this is new. I don't feel like for some reason I can't get anything done. Like, why can't I get anything done? You just explain why, because I guess it had some combination of my role or my relationship, or maybe it was routine is probably the one on the list that got me there. My routine changed. So it's like, I'm looking around, where's my laptop? Oh, my laptop died because I didn't plug it in. I can't find the new outlet, right? It's one, any of those four things or all of those four.
Right. So that can give you a clue as to why at the moment you're having trouble. And to quickly go through it, because I don't think you want the whole time on transitions. So you will look at the degree to which it changes your life. Then you look at your resources for coping. And that's what I call the forest system. And that makes
the forest, the forest system.
The forest system. And your resources for coping, your support system, your attitude, all of the things that enable you to cope more effectively. So you have the degree to which the transition changes your life, your resources for coping with it, And the other thing, and probably a most important thing, is the process.
So tell me about the process. Let me just go back and ask you one more question. So you've got your all these changes, transition, then you have the resources for coping, right?
Right.
You broke up for just a second. Did you say forest in there, were you saying
your coping strategy? Some people are better copers than others. Your support systems.
Support system. Yeah, I'm sorry. Support system. Right. Okay.
Your situation at the time. If you just moved into the big house and somebody in your family gets critically ill, that changes everything for the moment. It really does. So you have to look, is your situation at a good time when you're making the transition? Are your supports in line? What about your coping strategies? So you look at your resources for coping. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. You won't believe what I'm going to tell you. When I was much younger, I would say I was in my 30s. I was going with a very nice man, and he jilted me. I'll never forget it. He came over to my apartment and told me his psychiatrist told him he wasn't ready to get married. Whoa. So that was the day of the big jilt. Now, if you had interviewed me the day of the big jilt, I would have been devastated. I would have felt, you know, a lot of horrible things. It turned out the big jilt was the best thing that ever happened to me, because here I am 70 years or how many years later laughing about it. So you can never judge anything at the time of the transition. Mm-hmm. It's a process over time. And we did a study of men at NASA, Space Flight Center, in the 80s when they had a RIF, reduction in force. Mm-hmm. The day of the RIF, my colleague and I interviewed everyone whose job was eliminated. They were devastated. Mm-hmm. They said things like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It's worse than a diagnosis of cancer.
Wow.
Yes. We followed them up 6 months later. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you the truth, what I assumed, they would even be more miserable 6 months later. Mm-hmm. They weren't. They said things like, if I can handle this, I can handle anything.
Ooh, so they built resiliency.
And NASA helped them. This was the Goddard plant near Maryland. So we had a contract with them. The Goddard people put everyone whose job was eliminated, connected that person to someone in HR. So you were connected until you found something else. Now, most organizations don't have the money to do that, don't have the inclination. But because they did that, we were able to test it out and see 6 months later how different the reactions were. So when we're talking about any transition, you're talking at one point in time, and the way you react at that point in time isn't the way you're going to react 6 months or a year later or 5 years. As I say, the big joke was great because I met my husband the next weekend.
Nancy wastes no time.
Well, that's true in this instance. We
1 week later. So it would have been, you know, the jolt hadn't happened, you may not have gone out on the date.
Right.
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 Yeah.
And I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Wow.
Because my husband, he's been dead for a while, but he was my great support. So anyhow, you just never know. And that's one of the things you have to help people understand. Okay. It's miserable now. You're very discombobulated, and there's a lot of grieving that goes into it, but life isn't over, and life isn't the way you feel at this moment forever. So those are the three parts of the transition model that are important to think about.
Wait, just give me a quick recap of those three things of the transition model.
The degree to which this particular transition changes your life.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a biggie or a little one? Is it all four things or just one? The degree to which you have a support, your supports in order, your situation is not at a terrible time, your support system is good, your coping strategies. If you are a good coper, that is, you use lots of strategies flexibly, if you have a framework for coping that works for you, that's going to make a big difference. So you look at your four S's, your resources that you need. And they're not just coping resources, your support system and so forth. So you look at that, and then you look at the transition process, where you are in the transition. Where are you? Are you just thinking about retirement? Is this just a little thought? Are you starting to really explore it with financial planners? Where are you? And now, this is 3 years after retirement, where are you? It's not over at any time. So when you say retire sooner than what? It's a process.
It's a process.
The actions are going to change, and you've got to be prepared for some of these changes.
So I want to get to your six different kind of financial archetypes, if you will, or financial, but I'm just too interested to hear your message on coping. Can you give us the cliff notes on that?
Something happens that is unsettling. So you can ask yourself, is this a terrible thing? And then you ask yourself, do I have the resources to handle it? Mm-hmm. And if I don't, what do I need to do to cope more effectively? So for example, if it's that I have left work and therefore I have lost a lot of my support system, I had buddies at work and I could talk to my buddies. Now I'm not at work. And what am I going to do? How am I going to deal with that? So you evaluate, is this good, bad, or neutral? Do I have the resources to cope with it? And if I don't, what can I do to make it a little better? Mm. Now, I will tell you, and my colleague and I are practically out of these. I'm not selling this when I tell you that we developed something, a self-scoring instrument on the transition guide. And where we went, help people can actually go through their transition and rate them and end up with a little chart of where their deficits are and where their strengths are and what they can do about it. When I say I don't even want to talk about it because we're about to close this business, which has been going on for years, but now I think the time, what's happened, it was a paper pencil, the transition guide, and I thought it was terrific. Then we had to go into internet stuff, and it's just more complicated now. So I don't know whether we're going to keep at it or not. But what it does.
So it was an old school paper and pencil test, and now you have to digitize it if you want to keep it around.
It becomes a whole thing. But at any rate, there really is a way you can sort of say, well, this is where I am, and what can I do about it?
Let's go into these. I'm always so fascinated. I think that the happiest retirees are the most curious ones, right? They're like insatiably wanting to learn and do new things. And I've had a couple different fun interviews about Tom Vanderbilt was one of the authors that I have had on the show who talked about this constant learning, and his daughter learned chess when she was little and she was like four and he was a grown up, and grown ups think, oh, I can't learn something new. I got to be great at it. Well, if I'm going to play golf, I got to be like Tiger Woods, or if I'm going to be. So we tend not to do new things when we grow up. We think of the new things for little kids. So the Tom Vanderbilt interview that we've done on Retire Sooner, I think is a really good way of saying, look, it's not, you don't have to be a pro. You don't have to be Carrie Underwood if you're going to start singing. You don't have to be a grandmaster if you're going to do chess. You don't have to be Lance Armstrong if you're going to pick up a bike. You just have to go do something and you might love it. What are the kinds of retirees? Your six kinds. Let's go into those.
Okay. There's the continuum. And I'm a continuer. I mean, I retired technically in 2000 or 1998. Right. And up until this past year, I have been very involved in my work. And the reason, by the way, I'm not as involved this year is that I had the vaccination. And 3 months later, I got COVID and was in the hospital. So I am just recovering from COVID, which has cut into my professional activities. But even during the pandemic, I was helping organizations set up Zoom meetings on, for example, judges in the state of Massachusetts wanted a retirement program because they're required to retire. I helped them set it up. And I helped them do it on Zoom. So I was doing a lot of Zoom work before the virus tried to kill me.
Good luck. Good luck, virus, for you with Nancy's.
They didn't get away with it. So I'm a continuer. Okay. I don't work the way I did. I don't do exactly the same things, but I'm in the same field.
And let me just ask you, none of these are right or wrong. Is that correct? They're all just different ways to kind of identify yourself so that you're kind of hope so that you understand who you are
right,
and feel at ease and comfortable with, hey, this is the kind of retiree I am.
But more important, the paths help you know you're not stuck. You've retired and you're trying different things. And you're not stuck. As long as you live, you can sort of integrate new paths into your life. So the second path let's talk about is the searcher. And always, we are searchers. When I retired, I was thinking, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my life? I'm supposed to be an expert and I'm fumbling around. So you begin searching. And then a few years ago, I thought, well, what am I going to do? I'm now in the old group. You can't get a whole lot older than I am. And so now what am I going to do? So with each time that there's a change, I have to figure out what's next. And now that I'm recovering from the virus, and I'm not going to be traveling so much. Now what's next? I'm searching. You'll have to help me, Wes.
I'll help you.
I don't know what you want to do now when I grow up. So it's a constant, the searcher mode.
So now, you can always, so searcher mode is always something that you can downshift back into or re-go back into.
Right.
When one of the phases or your kind of retiree kind of changes. So if you were a continuer and no longer going to do the job, then you go back to searcher. Right. Then we go, what's next? I think I like adventure. Tell me about adventurer.
Oh, I'll tell you about this wonderful guy. So I interviewed him. He headed up a project for Congress, a research project. He had a lot of people working with him. He was a guy with a suit and a tie and a good looking briefcase. And suddenly Congress cut the funding. He's in his late 50s, early 60s. What does he do? And he really didn't know what to do. He had always sailed, and he went on a sailing trip by himself. And he remembered, first of all, his wife had died. And what helped him during that period, he remembered, was going to a massage therapist. And suddenly it occurred to him that that's what he'd like to do. He'd like to become a massage therapist. Well, that doesn't quite fit with the image of the guy in the suit and the briefcase.
Right.
But he was now remarried with children. He came home from the sailing trip announcing to his wife that that's what he was going to do.
What did the wife say?
Well, you'll get the story in a minute. So he was a lovely man, unfortunately died. But he got very involved in massage therapy. His wife wrote me, and I think I wrote about him in Retire Smart, Retire Happy. And his wife wrote me a letter saying that she could not read the book at first because she knew I had written about him. But now, as she thinks back, she is so proud that her husband could find what really made sense to him and helped him, and he helped other people. And she was so proud of him. So that's what happened eventually. So an adventurer, though, is somebody who is doing something different. A lot of house husbands and housewives, when their kids leave and they're no longer focused on their home and kid child rearing, some do something like become docents for museums. It's not what you do. It's that you're venturing into new territory. You're doing something really new.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like that is that's a huge piece of the equation. I like the adventurer who is trying something totally new. It's not necessarily going on an adventure. You don't have to go to Croatia for a trip. It's about doing something new.
It's for you, something new. And that revitalizes people. That really is exciting when that happens. Then what's the next one?
So let's go easy glider.
Okay. I envy the easy glider because it's the opposite of me. But the easy glider gets up in the morning with no agenda. Let the day unfold. Maybe I'll babysit. Maybe I'll go to a movie. Maybe I'll call a friend. You're just sort of relaxed.
And you're cool with it. And you're right. I actually, there's not a ton of those that I know. My father-in-law is actually that. He's an engineer, worked for two big manufacturing companies for 30, 40 years, and then retired. And the day his first day he woke up, he just said no alarm clock and never went back, and it just has zero agenda and just always has this project, that project. He sails, they travel, RV down to Florida, housing projects, but building a deck, but no agenda at any given time. And he's an easy glider. That's what he is.
To me, that's wonderful. I'm the opposite. I need a project. I need some structure. I need, but the easy gliders, the very few that I've known, are very happy.
Yeah.
So that's one.
I think you, and that is you either are an easy glider or you're not. That's not something you can just learn.
I don't think that's my next career.
Okay. So let's go to the next one. Let's go to the involved spectator.
Okay, those are all around. You ran an art museum. You were a curator. You were a director. Then you retire. You're not going to continue in that field, but you're involved in art. Mm-hmm. You were a lobbyist, and that comes to an end. You're not going to be a lobbyist when you don't have a power base. But you're still involved in the news and what's going on. And you're a news junkie. So when I was talking about this once, a woman said, now I know what to put on my card. Involved spectator. You're involved in the...
Tangentially from what you loved before.
But you're a spectator rather than in the midst of it doing something.
And that's okay. That's a good type of, that's a happy group.
Yeah. Now, what's next?
The retreater. The retreater.
And there are two kinds of retreaters. The one that is negative is the person who becomes a couch potato and doesn't move off the couch and gets depressed. Mm. And I think we all know people like that. And I have a nice story about how a man who owned a cleaner, nice man, retired and sat around, got more and more depressed until his son came in and remembered that he had loved baseball and he got his father to join a senior baseball group, and that changed his life.
No kidding. Well, that's a good, well, I think that's important because I do see there's an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of years ago called the Case Against Early Retirement. And I immediately was up in arms. I, hey, wait a minute, my book is about early retirement. And it was really one of the, they had a lot of statistics about just how hard and difficult retirement can be. And a lot of people do end up couch potato, too much TV, too much drinking, too much smoking, too much TV, too much everything that's unhealthy. And they're just, and they are, because they don't have a purpose. I call them core pursuits in my work. Yeah. Core pursuits are hobbies on steroids that you have a real passion and almost a meaning with. But so one, so you have this story, this couch potato kind of did come out of it
because
with a new core pursuit.
Yeah. Now the other kind of person who's a retreater is sometimes you need a moratorium. You need time out. Mm. And you take time out and you don't rush into anything. And it's a time limited path. It's not a path forever, because if it becomes forever, then you become a depressed retreater. But what I want to share is that everybody who's retreating isn't depressed and miserable. Sometimes you just need time out.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a terrible thing that you say for 3 months, I'm going to almost try to be an easy glider for 3 months. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing about the paths is that it gives people a sense of hope. Okay, I can't continue in my work. My field of work is such that it doesn't lend to continuing. So it can't be a continuer. But maybe let me search and let me look and try to find things that I've regretted that I didn't do. Let me try to find something that excites me. So the paths show you that you're not stuck on one path, and sometimes you're in a couple of paths at the same time. But it's saying, look, it's not work, no work. That's a dichotomy that really, I don't think makes a whole lot of sense. Some people do work, part-time work, you know, they ease into things. But there are forever possibilities, no matter what the age. We are seeing people live longer than we ever thought they would live. And what we don't want to see them just feel useless, mm-hmm. feel as if they no longer matter. So there are all these people, coaches, people who write books to help people find new paths, new visions for themselves.
Well, and that's part of what Nancy Schlossberg is helping us do, which is if you understand these paths and almost interchangeable periods of retirement, it gives you hope and it gives you promise about the future. And you mentioned longevity. I interviewed Dr. Andrew Steele, who's in the United Kingdom. And we talked about just his book, I want to say is, I think it's Ageless. And he talked about the research around turtles and Galapagos turtles and how some species have negligible senescence. So they almost don't really age, which is a fascinating topic. But he's looking at aging almost as some scientists look at aging almost as something you can cure. Now, we're not going to live to 200, but does it extend life 5 years or 10 years or 20 years? And the answer is likely yes, over the next couple of decades. And if we have more and more time And maybe you're part of this. I mean, you're young and healthy and you're in your 90s, for goodness sakes. And you're a good example of there is a lot of time to plan for. And I like the thought that these six areas or archetypes, if you will, allow you to kind of go in and out
right.
to give you hope and promise about the future, which I love that. Again, a lot of my career has been studying the habits of happy and unhappy retirees. What would you say if you were to boil all of any of these six when you're no longer really working? What do you see that it kind of makes people as at their happiest, the number one thread of the happy retiree, if you will?
Well, I have a friend, which is good that I have friends.
And, I was going to say, I like that. That's good. Yeah.
And
that in itself is good.
And he is amazing. He's in his late 80s. He is so, he also got the virus. And we got it at the same time.
Whoa.
I'm sicker, so I went to the hospital.
Hey, what were you guys doing when you got the virus?
We were just having dinner with people. We weren't doing, okay. We weren't going to restaurants. So I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
We both got it. He got quarantined in his apartment. I was in the hospital 3 weeks. He was quarantined 3 weeks. Now, I would have lost my mind being quarantined, not even allowed to open your door and take your garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, it wouldn't have been good for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was better to be in the hospital because miserable as I was, there was action. There were people. But he was so productive during that period because he is an artist. And so he was able to do all kinds of projects during this period. In fact, came up with an artistic, I don't know, sculpture that I think represents what happens to people in the pandemic. He motorized stick figures,
mm-hmm.
and he called it Longing to Touch.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved around these, they were motorized, but they never could touch.
Wow, that sounds cool.
Oh, really was. And I watched, well, I saw the production and how he can be alone for hours because he's got this passion and he's creative. Now, most of us, I'm not that creative. I would have gone, I really wouldn't have been a happy camper. So
I don't know. I'm somewhere in between you and your friend, Nancy. I don't know if I could do 3 weeks and still be happy, but I could do a couple of days maybe.
But anyway, a happy retiree. I think the title of the book, Revitalizing Retirement, Reshaping Your Identity, Relationships, and Purpose. If you are comfortable with your new identity that incorporates what you've done and who you are now, if you are comfortable with that, if you have meaningful relationships, which is probably the most critical thing, and if you have a sense of purpose, then you're going to be happy. If, on the other hand, you feel irrelevant, you feel sidelined, you feel nobody's interested in what you have to say or do, and you don't even know who you are anymore, and if you no longer have somebody, a spouse, a partner, a best friend, if those relationships have gone, and you don't have really somebody that you can really share your world with, you're not happy. And if you don't have any purpose, and that there's no better purpose, one purpose isn't better than another, just having a purpose
is the key.
Yeah, that's what makes a difference.
Well, at age 92, people still want to hear from you, by the way. So you're not sidelined at 92 and you're still going. And here's my last question for you is that, Nancy, what are, I guess I call these core pursuits, which are hobbies on steroids, similar to what purpose in life. Some of these can be your actual life purpose. Some of them are just heavy activities you love that you can really dedicate yourself to. I call it, again, hobbies on steroids. Happy retirees have almost 3.6 of them on average. Unhappy group has less than 2. My question to you, what's your favorite thing right now, or your top 1 or 2 core pursuits in your life?
Well, I have to tell you that I didn't know it when I was in the hospital, and I've never really thought much about mortality. But the doctors told my son that I was going to die that week. That was in April. Mm-hmm. We're now in July. So I have to tell you that one of my pursuits is getting better. And so I'm very involved with physical therapy, with exercise, beginning to be involved. I mean, I've never focused on myself before. Mm-hmm. My health has been there. I've always exercised. I eat well. So health has never been an issue for me. And I don't have any horrible diseases. So for the first time, really taking account of myself. And then I'm into fun right now.
I'm into fun. I like, you know what? That is not a core pursuit we've ever listed. We need to do that. Fun. I like that.
I mean, I'm going on, if I get better, I mean, I am better, but if I get, my goal is to get stronger. I'm chairing a committee in Washington, and I want to get to the meetings in October. Mm-hmm. That will be fun, but it's sort of work-related. And then I'm going on a Windstar cruise.
Ooh, those are nice. One in Europe or where?
Just a short one, starting in Panama and then going to Costa Rica.
Now, you seem pretty healthy, though. I mean, you're back to, but again, you got out of the hospital in April, so it's been several months.
I got out in May, but if you've read anything about COVID, there are people, it's the long version I seem to have. It mm-hmm. just, I don't have the COVID in me anymore, but you're pretty tired a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm looking forward to the cruise, to going to Washington. I really want to have fun. Now what else I'm going to do for fun, I don't know yet. I'm just sort of I'm thinking about that. Maybe that's closer to being an easy glider, or I'm adventuring into fun. But if you had interviewed me a year ago, I would have been telling you about all these wonderful things I was doing with different groups. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how they got to me, but it was such fun. Well, that was fun, but that was work fun. Mm-hmm. I want fun.
Fun is the new core pursuit for Nancy Schlossberg. And I think that I see a lot of parties in your near future. Cruise is going to be fun. Parties are going to be fun. You're going to be the social director for the next year. I like it.
Thank you. You got it. I've got my new label.
Well, if you are in Sarasota, next time I'm down in, one of my business partners is down in Longboat Key, and we have an office in Sarasota.
I'm 10 minutes from Longboat
Key. Well, I know you're near LBK. So I'm going to come down. I'm going to come party with you.
I'm going to write that down.
Okay. Wes Moss is coming down to Florida.
We'll have fun.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, listen, you are so wonderful to do this. And I do like that your next phase is going to be more fun, but they're going to also be asking you to do things on TV and radio and podcasts. So just keep doing these too, right? Obviously, you're going to keep doing these. Your message is so important because there's just not that many people that have the right kind of helpful insights. You know, again, 10,000 people a day retire in America. So we need the help. And so thank you for doing that and being part of that.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'm so glad I met you. I really am. I think you're so energetic and fun and relaxed. So many people are stiff. You have to have fun.
Thank you.
I was speech.
Thank you.
One day in somebody's cell phone, it was a live speech. Somebody's cell phone went off And I went over to the person. I said, I am so glad you have friends. That just relaxed everybody. And you've got that kind of personality. You have to go with the flow. And a bump, something that distracts and that you would have thought is negative when you're doing a podcast, you can turn around and it relaxes the audience. So anyway, I think you have to. I always had fun as a teacher and as a speaker because you're a performer, but you're entertaining. And you're
education and entertainment kind of all at the same time. And, you know, it is fun. It really is fun.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being on your show.
How wonderful is Nancy, age 92, still going strong. I love that she's in her fun phase. You can find her at transitionsthroughlife.com. And you can find our team, the Retire Sooner podcast team. We have offices in Georgia, Florida, Colorado, Texas. But more importantly, you can just reach out and find us online at wesmoss.com. Contact button, upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the team. Again, wesmoss.com. And thank you so much for listening.
This podcast is provided to you as a resource for informational purposes only and is not to be viewed as investment advice or recommendations. This information is being presented without consideration of the investment objectives, risk tolerance, or financial circumstances of any specific investor and might not be suitable for all investors. It is not intended to and should not form a primary basis for any investment decision that you may make. Always consult your own legal, tax, or investment advisor before making any investment or financial planning considerations. Please refer to the full disclosure in the podcast description for any additional information.